I want to say welcome to all of you in the room who are joining us. Welcome to everyone joining us online. We're so glad you're here. Thanks for spending your Sunday with us. My name is Clay. If we haven't had the chance to meet, I am a pastor on staff here. And something else you should know about me is that I love baseball. Do we have any baseball fans in the house? Yeah, go Braves. Yeah, they're doing pretty well right now. Anybody play baseball growing up? Anybody coach baseball? Coach your kids right now. Anybody spending hours traveling to travel ball tournaments where parents yell at each other and yell at the umps? Yeah, anybody that parent? No, you don't have to be that honest. I'm just kidding. I legitimately missed those days, though, when I was traveling and playing baseball. They were some of the most fun days of my life. I don't necessarily miss the parents raging, but I miss playing. And I have a 10-month-old son right now that I can't wait until he is able to play baseball and we can get him in that. And if you're in that season right now, I hope you enjoy it. Don't forget about it. Don't try to rush through it. I hope you enjoy it because this season, like every season, ultimately will eventually come to an end. Actually, all seasons eventually come to an end. I can vividly remember my baseball career starting to come to an end. I was a senior in high school. I was trying to figure out what college I was gonna go to. Do I wanna continue trying to pursue this dream of playing baseball for my entire life? Do I wanna try to make this a career and try to make this something that I can do? And in order to do that, I was gonna have to go to a small school because I wasn't good enough to go to a big school. I thought I was pretty good, but not good enough to get recruited by the big ones. And so it was like, do I continue trying to move down this path and maybe keep doing the practices and the tryouts and all the things and try to move down that path? Or do I make a change and go to a bigger school? Do I go to a big SEC school and maybe start figuring out what's next for me? What is my career going to be? What could I be interested in? What am I going to do next? And so I started to wrestle with this. It was challenging. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And now looking back, what I realized is the reason it was so difficult is because I wasn't just choosing a college. I was actually choosing whether a season that I deeply loved was going to end. And that's what I want to talk about today. Today we are in a series called Clockwise. We're in part 3 of Clockwise, where we've been looking at time. We've been looking at this valuable or precious resource that we always wish that we could have more of. We sometimes feel like we're wasting. We're like, how do I get that time back? And so over the course of this series, we thought, how can we look at time in order that we might start spending our time a little bit more wisely? What would it look like to unpack Ecclesiastes and some different verses in scripture in order to see what does it look like to use our time wisely? If you missed the first two parts, you should definitely go back and check those out. Joel did an incredible job setting me up and where we are today to close out this series. And in the first part of this series, Joel introduced this verse. It comes from Psalm, and it's actually the only psalm that's written by Moses. And so Moses writes this psalm, and I want to throw it back up because it's almost like a thesis statement for this series altogether. It says this: teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Moses is asking God to show him how to be intentional with his life. He's asking God to show him the shortness of life so that he could spend his time more wisely. What he's realized that there is wisdom in thinking about time, and not just time, there's wisdom in thinking about the endings of time. So the endings of seasons, the endings of choices, the endings of chapters, the endings of eras, because he knows that thinking honestly about endings is ultimately going to lead to a place where we have more wisdom and we live better lives, which leads to what I want to talk about today, and that is necessary endings. Because the reality is, when it comes to endings, most of us don't actually enjoy thinking about endings. We don't enjoy talking about endings, and we don't like thinking about it. This is why Moses is like, hey, teach me how to think about endings. Teach me what it looks like to think about time, because we don't naturally do this. Our tendency, the reality is actually to avoid endings. We don't like them. They're painful at times. They're scary. We try to stay away from them. And so Moses and us, we need to consider, how do we think about endings? It's why, maybe for you, we argue with our spouse when Christmas is starting to end. And you're like, can we just keep that Christmas tree up for one more day? Because we don't want it to end. Or it's why when we're on vacation and we sense that vacation is starting to end, we're like already planning the next vacation. We're already looking ahead. How do we not let this end? Or maybe it's how when your student or your son or daughter is getting ready to go to college, you start sliding that local college brochure in front of them so that they don't go too far away from the house because you want that season to continue. We ultimately resist endings throughout our lives. One of the clearest ways that we actually see this show up is in our stuff. So I don't know, married people in the room, I don't know who all is married, but if you've been married, maybe you've experienced this where your spouse goes and asks you, how long have you had this? How long have you had this thing? I didn't even know you still had this in the house. And so you're like, well, I like it because dot, 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 so that you can keep it. But that's not really the cause. The cause is just that it's especially hard to get rid of your things. It's especially hard to get rid of our things. I've actually seen how this plays out in my own marriage. My wife and I, Allie, when we were getting married, we quickly realized that we were gonna have way too many coffee mugs in our house. She was bringing her stuff into our house and I had a lot of mugs already. There's some compatibility there. We both appreciate coffee and coffee mugs. And we realized that we were gonna have way too many of these. And so Allie, my wife, she's very creative. And so she came up with this incredible idea. It was this, a mug draft. Because we clearly needed to get rid of some, but neither of us wanted to. And so she had this amazing idea where we laid out all of our mugs on the ground, and then we each got a set number of picks in order to pick the ones that we wanted to keep. And by the end of this, we're gonna get rid of some. We're gonna make a necessary ending. Well, we're going along and I'm starting to sense as we're moving that this is gonna be harder than I thought it was gonna be. And I'm starting to see that Disney coffee mug from 2009 with my family and it's got Mickey on it and I really wanna keep that mug. And then I start to see that coffee mug that they're just from a coffee shop from California with a trip with friends, but even though I never use it, I still wanna keep that mug. And then there's the one that was a gift to me and it has a Bible verse on it, and it's just wrong to throw away a mug with a Bible verse on it. And so Allie and I are both coming to this realization at the same time, and I was like, okay, I did what most of us do. I went and grabbed a box and I brought it downstairs, and after the draft was over, I put them all in a box. And then I marched it up and put it in the attic. And so we have a box of mugs in our attic right now because we refuse necessary endings, because we resist necessary endings. And you all are laughing, but I bet you experienced something like this too, that you've got something in your life like this that you resist giving away or that you resist ending. But good news for us today is we're not actually crazy. There's actually some science behind all of this. Psychologists have done some research on this in order to help explain what's kind of going on. And so they call it the endowment effect. It's this tendency to overvalue something simply because it's yours. And funny enough, the experiment that they did with this to prove this was with coffee mugs. So there's something about porcelain and paint with coffee in it that we really love, or maybe we're just addicted to coffee. It's one of the two. But research gave in order to show this, they gave one group the mugs, just random mugs, nothing special about the mugs, and they asked, how much would you be willing to sell this for? So what's max value for them? Then they got the other group, group two, and they didn't give them a mug. They just said, how much would you be willing to buy this mug for? Again, nothing special about any of the mugs, but what they found is that the people who were selling the mug, who had had it in their possession, wanted twice the amount that the people buying had or were offering. And so there was something there. There was this thing that was going on. Essentially, it's because it's hard to let go of stuff that we have, stuff that is ours. It's difficult to make an ending. Once the mug got in their hands, all of a sudden they started valuing it higher than someone who is simply buying it. What this proves is the moment something becomes yours, your brain actually stops calculating its value objectively. Instead, what your brain does is the moment something becomes yours, your brain starts calculating how much it would hurt to lose it or to end it. And this is why it can be so difficult to sell your house, because you've lived in your house and you've raised kids in your house and your house is special to you. And so you're gonna put it on the market for a lot higher than maybe someone is actually willing to buy it. And when someone comes in looking to maybe buy it, you're gonna be like, no, it's worth way more than this. I don't know what's happening. You're gonna justify it. And it's kind of funny when it comes to mugs or houses or t-shirts or maybe that big comfy chair in your living room that you just can't seem to get rid of. It's funny, But it's also not limited to those things. It's not limited to our stuff. This idea actually shows up in all of our life. It shows up in our relationships. It shows up in our jobs or our careers. It shows up in our habits. It shows up in commitments that we made or events and things on our calendar that just keep sticking around because we don't want to make an ending. There's something in us that once it becomes ours, once we live in it, once it is yours, we struggle to let it go. Honestly, we come up with all the reasons that we need them. We resist, we avoid, we put them in a box and we move them to the attic because it's just more comfortable. It's familiar. It's safer to not completely let it go. Going back to the baseball story for a minute, this is exactly what started happening to me. I remember starting to feel like an ending was probably coming, that I was probably supposed to start changing to something else, that probably the college, the bigger college, was my calling. I was probably needing to step into something else to embrace what's next. But as a high school senior, there was something in me as an 18-year-old that was like, I don't know if I want to do that. If you can remember back when you were in high school, you didn't actually own that many things for yourself. And so for me, being an athlete, playing baseball, that was one thing that felt like mine. Like, this was my thing. This was my identity. I was an athlete. I had the glove, the bat. I went to practices. This is how I spent my time. I poured out my blood, sweat, and tears into this game. And so it was really difficult for me to think about or comprehend what it might look like to let that go. And so I resisted. I put off responding to the coach. I tried to avoid actually filling out the applications. I didn't want to think about it. I tried to prolong this decision as long as I possibly could, because as long as I didn't make the decision, the ending wasn't actually real yet. As long as I didn't make it, as long as I didn't step forward, step proactively into it, then maybe it wasn't real yet. And maybe you've felt something like this too. Maybe you've experienced something like this and it's starting to remind you of whatever that situation is. And if you're in the room and you're feeling that, I'm so glad you're here today, because I want to ask you a set of questions that I wish that I could have asked myself a set of questions back when I was going through this, back when I was an 18-year-old senior in high school. And the questions start like this: what if endings aren't something to fear or resist or avoid? What if instead endings were something that we could actually learn to expect, to anticipate, or maybe even embrace? Maybe our response to endings, and more specifically necessary endings, could be less about resistance or avoidance and more about learning to see them coming and trusting what's on the other side. I think this is actually what Scripture teaches us. I think this is what Scripture invites us into. It's interesting that the wisest man in the Old Testament and the wisest man in the New Testament both seem to directly address this very thing. And so if you've been tracking with us, you know, like I said, we've been in Ecclesiastes, which was written by King Solomon. So King Solomon was the son of David, and King Solomon was considered, still is considered, the wisest man who ever lived. And he wrote some incredible wisdom literature. He wrote Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Songs of Solomon. And Proverbs is amazing. Like, I love Proverbs. It's an incredible book. It's got 31 chapters, kind of like 31 days in a month. And so you can almost treat it like a little daily devotional, and you can get helpful tips, advice, things you can throw up on your Instagram bio or tweet, and it's gonna look amazing. But then Solomon moves on and he writes Ecclesiastes, and it comes right after Proverbs in our Bibles. And the only problem is Ecclesiastes takes a pretty drastic turn. This is the theme of Ecclesiastes. It says this: meaningless, meaningless, utterly meaningless, everything is meaningless. Who's gonna throw that on their IG bio, Instagram? Yeah, tweet that. That is different. It hits different. I don't know why some people don't like reading this book. It's crazy. It's full of cheer. It's so uplifting. But actually, there is a lot of helpful wisdom in here if you read into it, if you dig into it, and you begin to uncover. And one of the things that I think you'll find is exactly what I want to talk about today. So in chapter 3, Solomon actually comes to this helpful realization, that we're talking about this morning, the thing we all know, but at the same time resist. It's that everything has a season, and also everything has an ending. And so I want to look at this passage that I love to read all the way through. Maybe you've read this before. It's a fun passage to read. It's poetry. He's going to list off a lot of different items and things that we go through in our lives that people have seasons for, that people go through life with and they wrestle with, and things that just seem to come our way. And as we go through this passage, I'm actually going to try to read this pretty slowly because I want it to really sit. And I want you to notice, maybe just notice as we're going through it slowly, what starts to rise up within you. That these things that are coming that he says are gonna be a part of life, these things that he says we're gonna have seasons come in and out of our lives with, and when you hear that, what starts to come up in you? What emotions start to rise up maybe, and what do you resist? And so let's look at this. It's chapter 3, verse 1. It says, "For everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven." He says, "A time to be born and a time to die." He says, "A time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted." He says, "There's a time to kill and a time to heal." He says, "There's a time to break down and a time to build up." He says, "There's a time to weep and a time to laugh. There's a time to mourn and a time to dance. There's a time to cast away stones and there's a time to gather stones together. There's a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. There's a time to seek and a time to lose. There's a time to keep and there's a time to cast away. There's a time to tear and a time to sow. There's a time to keep silence and there's a time to speak. There's a time to love and a time to hate. There's a time for war and there's a time for peace." And so I don't know how that hits you. It's interesting, isn't it? I don't know how it felt for you when you were reading it or when I was reading it out loud. I know for me, when I first read it, I was like, man, I don't want there to be a time for all of that. Like, I don't want that to be a part of my life. Maybe some of those things, but I want to pick and choose the things that are going to be a part of my life. And if you're anything like me, you know exactly the ones I'm talking about, and you probably separate them into two buckets. The first bucket is the good bucket, laughing, dancing, planting, building, love. Those things are good. Those things are what I hope most of my life involves. These are the seasons that I want to stay in forever. These are the things that I always want to be doing. I love these parts of life. This is when life is going well. But then he also says we've got this bad bucket that you probably sorted it into, which is dying, weeping, war, tearing down, or uprooting. And to these, I go, nah, I'm good. Like, no, thank you. I'll pass on those, hard pass. There's something in me that immediately resists. There's something in me that immediately wants to just keep reading, that wants to avoid even thinking about those things being a part of my life. Maybe they can be a part of someone else's life, but not my life. There's a part of me that wants to find workarounds, that wants to try to fix my life so that I never have to go through the bad things. We agree with Solomon in theory. It's like, yeah, I know those are part of someone else's life. Those are part of life. Those are seasons that people have to go through, but we do everything in our power to avoid those. And there's something about us, there's something in us that actually even begins to think, there's a way that I can get around this. That if I pray enough, that if I talk to the right people, that if I do all the right things, if I find the right workaround, I can actually avoid ever having any of that come into my life. We can control the seasons. We can even avoid the things that feel like endings. We can resist them all together. But I think if Solomon were here, if he was standing in front of us, I think he would say, no, you're actually missing the point. He says, I'm not writing this so that you will avoid endings. I'm writing this so that you will begin to anticipate endings, so that you will expect them, so that you may even prepare for them, or maybe even proactively pursue an ending, step into an ending. Because the point I'm making is not that you go out and seek the good life and avoid all of the bad stuff. It's that you begin to come to terms with the fact that actually endings are just inevitable. The endings are inevitable. They're a part of life. Maybe they're not always enjoyable. Maybe they're not always fun, but they are a part of life. And in a way, knowing that, it actually gives us permission. It gives us permission to stop being shocked when a good season ends. It gives us permission to stop assuming that ending something means that you did something wrong, or permission to stop feeling guilty for letting something go or laying something down. I think what this helps us see ultimately is that endings aren't an interruption to a good life. They are simply part of one. And man, this is such good news. This is great news that we can anticipate these endings, that we can know that they're coming, and that it's actually not always a bad thing, that we can continue to move forward and they're just a part of life, that we can continue to pray and move forward and it's not all gonna be bad. And there's part of me that's like, man, we could have just focused on this the entire message. We could have just stayed in Ecclesiastes. But there's something even better that happens around 900 years later when Jesus comes to earth. And he doesn't just say that we should anticipate endings. He doesn't just say that they are inevitable, although he does hint at that. But on top of that, Jesus actually goes a step further and tells us that endings can actually be beneficial. And so I want us to look at this very important passage, this passage from John 15 that maybe some of you will immediately recognize. This is where John records the last I am statement of Jesus. This is the last one that shows up in the Gospel of John. And these I am statements are these statements that Jesus is making about himself, where he pulls a symbol or something very important or sacred in Jewish history. And he shows them that symbol is actually about him. Or he uses the symbol to tell them about him, about who God is and how he relates to humanity, to us. And so the symbol that he pulls here in John 15 is this thing, it's a vine. And so I wanna read John chapter 15, verse 1. It says this. He says, "I am the true vine," which is a stunning claim in and of itself, that he is gonna come in and say this to the people who, up until this point, all of the listeners would have actually thought that they were each individual vines, that they were all being taken care of by God themselves, part of God's vineyard, individually growing under his care. And what's so interesting about this too is that there was actually a vine over the doorway of the temple in Israel, where this was kind of a symbol or a reminder of this truth, that God was taking care of them and tending for them so that they would be more fruitful. And what's crazy is that Jesus now comes in and he says, no, forget all that. I am the true vine. And he's probably standing in front of that doorway as he makes this statement. And the implication is that the old way is ending. There's an ending happening and there is a new beginning. A beginning is starting right now. And he continues, I am the true vine and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit. And so we're starting to put these pieces together. We're starting to uncover what he's talking about here. He says, I'm the true vine. So Jesus is the vine. My Father is the gardener. The Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch. The branch is us or people or we. And then he in me that bears no fruit. And so what we see is that the goal is ultimately fruit. That the goal in all of this is more fruitfulness. And then he goes on again. And he says, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes. I love this. This word here is kathero. It's a Greek word that only gets used once in the entire New Testament, and it's right here. And it means that he's cutting, the word means to cut off superfluous growth off of a plant, to clean it off, to clean. And so he says this word, prune, but we would maybe define it a little bit differently. Pruning is the act of cutting off parts of the plant to prepare it for another season of growth. It's cutting off parts of the plant to prepare for another season of growth. It's intentionally and proactively going to the plant and beginning to make necessary endings. And if we have any gardeners in the room, you know this. This is also one of the most important and beneficial things that you can actually do for a plant. The reason that this is necessary is that plants, over and over again, they keep producing new parts of themselves, and they're more designed for reach. And so they keep producing over and over again more buds. But at the end of the day, they don't actually have the energy in order to sustain all of the things that they're producing. And so a wise gardener has to come along and look at, okay, what is worth keeping and what is worth ending or taking away? Which ones can actually go the distance and begin to flourish? And so you prune off the bad ones in order to make the plant grow and flourish across to the end. Essentially, pruning is an ending in anticipation of a new beginning. It's an ending in anticipation of a new beginning. The gardener is taking a proactive step towards an ending because of the knowledge that it is actually good for the plant in order to do so. It's good for the plant as a whole. He's got a vision for what it is, and so he takes the necessary ending. And then look at what Jesus next. He does this so that it will be even more fruitful. So notice, he's not doing this just to do an ending. It's not ending it just to end it. It's not arbitrary. No, Jesus is saying that you make an ending very intentionally, that there's a goal behind it, that there is a vision, that there's something in the distance, a preferred future that you can see that he knows about, and that will make you want to make the ending. That is part of it. It's to accomplish the goal of making something more fruitful. The wise gardener knows the full potential and is willing to make the necessary endings in order to get there. Not because he's against it, but because he's actually for it. And I think the same is true for you. The seasons will come and go. Time will continue passing by. You keep growing and producing. And what happens as you're doing this is you naturally start to pick up commitments. You naturally start to pick up habits. You pick up new things along the way that aren't even necessarily bad things. They were things that were super valuable in the moment, and they helped you in the moment, and you grew from those. They're not necessarily wrong, but have begun to take up too much of your energy, your time, and your resources. They are no longer doing what you actually need them to do. They're not helping you become who you're meant to become. They don't help you increase in fruitfulness, which is ultimately the goal. And I think it's at this moment where our tolerance for endings really begins to be tested. It's in these moments where our tolerance or how we feel about making a necessary ending, where how comfortable we are with that begins to be tested. Because there's a lot of uncertainty on the other side of an ending. It's going from what is known and stepping into something that is unknown. You don't know what's on the other side. And it's in this tension that we all feel that I believe this image of the vine becomes so valuable. Because when we're in the middle of a season like this, we can be reminded that what feels difficult actually has the potential to be for our ultimate good. This image of the vine was not only a stunning claim back in the first century, it's also a stunning claim in our day because it radically shifts how we begin to think about endings. All of a sudden, our question goes from why is this happening to me to what might God be doing in me? And that question changes everything. When we start asking this question instead of this question, it is an absolute game changer. It changes the way that we work. It changes the way that we live. It changes the way that we go about our lives. It changes the things that we hold on to, the things that we don't want to let go of. Someone asking this type of question actually isn't afraid of endings. They're no longer scared of taking that next step because what they've learned is that endings aren't the opposite of growth. They're actually the pathway to it. The person who has started asking this question recognizes that life actually isn't a long string of beginnings. It's not beginning after beginning after beginning. No, your life, the way that life works is actually beginnings and endings, both together. It's beginning and letting go. It's beginning and stopping. It's beginning and stepping away. And it's this kind of question that will begin to help us really cooperate or work with what God is trying to do in us. And this is so important because yes, seasons are gonna change on their own. Times are gonna pass and moments are gonna come and it's just gonna happen to us and there's not really anything that we can do about it. We can't change it. But most of the time, a lot of the time, what God is gonna do is a little bit different than that. What God is gonna do is he's actually going to invite you into this process with him. It's gonna act more like an invitation. He's gonna stir something inside of you. It's gonna be a quiet restlessness. It's gonna be a persistent sense that, man, maybe I should take this step, that something needs to change. It's a knowing you can't shake, that it's time to let go of something you've been holding onto. And then God will wait. And it will become up to you in this moment. Will you resist or will you step into it? Will you resist? Will you lean or avoid, or will you lean in? I still think about this for myself, going back to my senior year of high school. And I had this moment where, yeah, what am I gonna do? I'm still trying to figure out what my next step is. I'm living in this tension. I feel like I'm getting a sense for what I should do and what the right move is. I should probably end baseball, but there was still, like I said, something in me that didn't want to completely let go. I knew it was time, but I didn't want to admit that it was time. And so I'm trying to figure out what should I do? Should I end it? And I felt this invitation. I felt God inviting me, but I just was uncertain. And so eventually I finally did make the decision. But ultimately what I was realizing is that, man, these endings, if I could go back and tell my 18-year-old self, I know you want all the clarity in the world. I know you wish you could already know in advance what is your life is gonna look like. And if I could tell him, hey, you're gonna take these steps, you're gonna make this ending, and your life is gonna produce so much more fruit and growth and maturity than you ever thought possible. I wish I could have had that moment, but I think what God invites us into is more so this opportunity to trust, to invite him along with us, to go with him and trust that he's with us. And so we start to lean on him. We start to look to him. We grow closer to him. Our relationship is strengthened with him in this process. And if I could tell you anything, what I realized through that ending and the series of endings that followed, I kept having to go through different endings. It's ultimately what got me here. It wasn't beginning after beginning, picking up more and more things. Eventually I had to end some things in order to get to the place that I ultimately wanted to go. And what I know is I'm sure that life would have been great. The baseball would have been amazing and I could have seen where that was going. But I promise you that I believe that I have produced so much more fruit and I'm growing more and maturing more based on the ending that I eventually was able to make. Our life is endings just as much as it is beginnings. What I learned in that moment is that I have to let go in order to grow. And what I think is true of all of us, we have to let go in order to grow. And so my hope in this message is simple. My hope that you would walk away with this morning, my prayer for you is that you would just consider that maybe you would consider the invitation you've been resisting isn't God working against you, that it's actually God working with you. And that maybe, just maybe, endings aren't actually something that we have to avoid or resist, but that they're actually something that we can expect, that we can anticipate, and that maybe even embrace. And so I don't know what it is for you this morning. I don't know what's been coming to mind. I don't know if you're in a season like this, a transitional period where you're trying to figure out, man, I feel like something in me needs to stop. I need to end it, but I don't want to. And I like it and it feels good and I'm not ready. It feels safe, it's familiar, it's comfortable. And I don't know what that is for you. Maybe it's a relationship, a job, or something else. But I would just invite you this morning, what would it look like to actually name that thing and then surrender it? What would it look like this morning to maybe stop resisting endings, stop avoiding this thing that you've been putting off because you're a little bit afraid of it and you actually started leaning into it and moving towards it? What would it look like to start anticipating endings rather than trying to just put them off? What would it look like to proactively move toward that thing? Because what I don't want you to do is to just continue fearing letting something go to the point where you're unable to let God do something new in you, to let God start a new beginning in your life. So what would it look like to embrace that thing? That normally at this time, I would kind of start to close us, and I would say a prayer as we move into this next part of the sermon, or the, what we're doing this morning. But instead, I wanted to do something different. There's this song that my wife and I love. This is something that we had playing in our cars a lot of the times, and it speaks directly to this idea. And what it does is it starts to shift the posture of our hearts. It's these lines that hit pretty hard because you're saying this or responding to God in this way, and it's exactly what we're talking about today. I love this line. It says, "So be the gardener of my heart." It says, "Tend the soil of my soul. Break up the fallow ground, that ground that's being prepared for growth. Cut back the overgrown, and I won't shy away. I will let the branches fall. So what you want can stay, and what you love can grow." What if that was the posture of our hearts? What if that was what we stepped into this Sunday with? What if that was what we stepped into this week with, of saying, "God, I surrender, I trust you. I'm gonna let you do whatever you need to do. And I'm gonna actually step into that and work with you. I'm gonna cooperate with you. I'm gonna accept the invitation, and I'm going to move forward with you, trusting that it is going to be for my good in the end." What would it look like if we started to live that way?